seems above.
We are talking about the whole matter of administration in the work of the church. The sociologists always get themselves fancy names for any of these things, and I've borrowed the sociologists' term. They talk about the herd concept of administration, the person-to-person concept, and the group concept, so that I would like to differentiate them by using these three terms, which I have borrowed from that field as they've talked about changing concepts in administration. Under the herd concept, we have a leader leading in an authoritarian fashion. In other words, it's a concept here of a leader just actually being a man in authority who tells people what to do. He just more or less, he is the leader, he is the final source of authority, and everybody else does exactly what he tells them to do. In other words, this is the concept here of a leader. This is, let me say very definitely, not the concept of a shepherd and sheep, but this, in which we use it in theology, but this is a concept here of an authoritarian leader who is having people do what he wants to, and I suppose it has the basic idea behind it that he is doing this on the basis of self-interest. In other words, he has a group following him, doing what he wants. He's setting down all the rules, and he's laying down things. It's the man here who wants to run the whole show himself, and certainly in the whole area of administration, especially in business, for quite a period of time, this was considered by a lot of people to be a perfectly appropriate concept of administration. In other words, their idea was that since I supply the property, I supply the capital, this gives me somehow or other a right to make all of the decisions about what happens in any particular unit. I have the right to make all of the decisions. I have the complete say-so. And we still, of course, have some people of that kind today operating in various organizations. The next development, and I might say this is the second one, is still a relatively recent one, is the person-to-person concept. In other words, we don't have a man here who is just telling people who is the man in authority, but we have each supervisor in direct relationship with the people working with them. In other words, he directly working with each subordinate tries to work things out so that they can work them out together, but it's still a person-to-person situation. In other words, the idea being that you consult, that you don't just tell people, you get them to understand what goes on and so forth. And we get to the place now where a supervisor, an administrator in any position, works with individuals in this person-to-person concept and takes their opinions into consideration, discusses it with them, may even get to the place where he treats them pretty largely as equals, but where we study it from the standpoint of relationships here now, of person to person, or the supervisor to each individual working with him. And then more recently, and this I would say was within the last 15 to 20 years, the group concept has been developed. That is that you're talking now about the whole relationship of a leader to a group. You're talking about a relationship of members in a group to each other. You're talking about the relationship of one group in administration to groups both higher in the hierarchy and lower than they are. But you're dealing here with groups. And I think we find that as organizations become more complex, we're constantly dealing with groups. And I suppose especially in the church, where we've always had boards and committees where we've been dealing with groups, the first two concepts of administration, which were practiced for quite a period of time, have created real conflicts. In a church didn't want one person here as the leader, and this one person telling the boards what to do. All of these people in the church were members of the royal priesthood. They were members who had the right to serve God as they chose according to their talents. To have any one person, whether it's the pastor, whether it happens to be, in this case, the president elected in the congregation, or whoever it might be, you see, created real difficulties. And as we pointed out, this concept of administration has been found not to work in any organization very effectively at the present time. In other words, it works only if you've got a mature individual as a leader and a group of immature people who are willing to be led underneath him. And not very often do you have that situation in any congregation that I know of. This just doesn't work in most cases in business today. It doesn't work in most any group. Now, the person-to-person concept, of course, didn't work too well in the church either. Because just as soon as you had one man, the president, let's say, negotiating directly with all of these individuals which met as board, then you got into constant trouble because here was a group, and he talked to two or three people out of a board of five. He didn't get to talk to the rest of them. The first thing they thought, he's trying to put something over. He may have tried desperately to talk to all of them. He's trying to put something over. In other words, the only way this thing works in a church is to recognize that we've got to work with groups. and that our whole group concept of administration and group concept of organization really becomes basic. So in that respect, what we have in a good number of church situations where we have various boards where we already have groups, I think is all to the good. Where we still have a problem is this. We have groups, but we don't have groups in an organizational structure very frequently, or at least not one designed to make the groups fit together. We're likely to have 3, 4, 5 groups, each one still pretty much autonomous, and the net result is that since you can't lay down any set of functions, which doesn't impinge on some of the other functions if you've got the same objective, we constantly have problems of who does what, getting into each other's hair, and so forth. So that basically the idea of groups is sound, but we've got to get the groups organized in such a way that they're working together for a common purpose, and we get machinery here in the organization to get them chances to work together. Now, before we go into the 3 steps in developing an organizational structure, just a few words again on some of the factors to consider as you develop an organizational structure. Pretty clearly, we have to go back again and ask what are our objectives and what are our plans. You don't use the same organizational structure overall. In other words, you need an organizational structure which is effective for carrying out a particular set of plans and objectives. A new congregation, a small growing congregation, needs a different organizational structure from a mature congregation. You're going to be doing different things. You've got a different situation. You don't want to set up the same type of organizational structure. In other words, if somebody says, here is an ideal structure, which he puts in a manual, and you start a congregation, you say, okay, fine, we'll start with this structure, it is probably just as wrong as can be. You need a structure which is geared to this particular organization's objectives and plans at this particular time. A second point gets around to the personnel. You have to take the people you work with into consideration in an organizational structure. Here's one of the places where what I'm going to say to you is different from what I have said to businessmen's groups talking about the same point. Ordinarily in business, you don't build an organizational structure around the people who are currently available. You build the organizational structure around the plans and the objectives of this organization. And if you decide this is the best organizational structure at this time for this particular business organization, then you go around and match personnel with the various things you need, and if you find you have some gaps, the answer is very simple. Here's a spot, and here's a spot where you go out and hire somebody from the outside who's already qualified. You don't build with the people you have on hand. You take the people you have on hand, but if you find that there are some gaps in a better structure, you go outside and decide to hire these people to fill the gaps. Of course, there are times when this is impossible and you have to grow your own. But at least you certainly don't stop until you've seen if the right people for the kind of structure you want are there. But you see, right here is where our job becomes tougher in a local parish. We have got to build an organizational structure and do the job with the people we have got. This isn't to say that we can't go outside and get other people brought into the kingdom of Christ, but they're likely very frequently not to be more effective in doing the work of the parish than what we have. And I would be very hesitant to propose that if we needed a good controller, you went out and tried all your mission activities on a good unchurched controller in the neighborhood to see if you could get him in. This sort of bothers me as having something just a bit wrong with it. In other words, here we don't get to the place. I'm not saying you shouldn't go after the controller on another basis, but not just to fill the job. I've heard of various cases where this has been done by organizations in a church. You decided you needed somebody's ability, you got him in the organization, immediately got him a job and had him unhappy. Or in some cases found that's all he was waiting for to begin with. But you've got a different problem here. You've got to work with the people you have. So in building the organizational structure at this place, you're going to have to build it around the work to be done, but also compromise and build it so you can do the most effective job in the work to be done with the people you're going to have to do it. There's no use saying this is the kind of organizational structure this congregation should have, and then turn around and find that the people who are there aren't going to fit with doing that kind of a job at all. In other words, this has to be built to fit this particular group of people in this particular congregation. This is the reason I am very dubious about any of these organizational structures which you pick up and say, okay, fine, let's put this here. You can't do it. You've got to develop it to suit this particular situation and the types of people that you have. Now, again, taking a long-run point of view, let me say this. In doing it, you ought to ask what is the best kind of structure for this particular group. And then if you find you need people with particular abilities, you ought to set up training programs to get people who can handle those particular activities. But there's no use setting that program up today and saying, we'll have people trained 5 years from now. You just get frustration, and they say, well, this whole thing of administration doesn't make sense. So that here is a real basic difference between what would happen in business, what would happen in any organization that can go out and hire people, and what happens here in a local parish. You've got to take the people you have to work with into consideration. And this means that instead of building, even now, for this particular situation, the ideal structure, you're building a workable structure with those people and saying, these things we could do better if we had people with the following types of training and ability, and then get around to the place where you do something about this at the same time. Now, you can see that this is a real tough job, and this gets to be a real challenge. It makes church administration tougher. And keep in mind, you're dealing with volunteers at the same time. But when we recognize the significance of the work we're doing, I think it becomes important that we do it. But I stress this primarily not to make you feel that the job is unusually difficult and impossible, but I'm sure that a lot of mistakes have been made by trying to take a standard organizational pattern which doesn't fit a situation and put this into a particular situation and say, okay, because we've got all of these blocks now, the thing is going to fit, we've got all the committees, and we end up with complete frustration. And people say, oh, we ought to go back to what we had before. This simpler thing was much better. And instead of getting more active workers, you've just got a frustrated group that thinks it's all foolishness. You've got to take the people into consideration. What you can do in some situations, you obviously cannot do in others because you don't have people trained for various jobs. See, what I was put the third point down for environment, I've pretty well gotten into talking about personnel, but let me stress there again that this is... Organization is a developmental process just like planning. You don't build an ideal organization and say, this is it, boy, we got it now. I finally got this congregation is at the place where it has an organizational structure that works. This would only be true if this congregation has also now become stagnant. If this was the best organizational structure for today, as this congregation develops, this is no longer likely to be the best organizational structure for that congregation in the future. So that organization is a developmental thing, just as planning is. You don't do the job once and decide this is it. And furthermore, let me say this, if you set up a new set of organizations, procedures, and so forth, organizational charts, and somebody finds out within 6 months that some parts of it don't work, and they say, well, look, this just proves that we shouldn't have monkeyed around with it in the first place, it's just a pretty good sign that you're going to find out 6 months later that some of the things you did now still don't work. And one of the reasons is not that you didn't foresee all the problems, but let me put it this way. If you put into effect an organizational structure that works more effectively, you're going to find that people become more enthusiastic, more people get to work with it. You're going to find that that's going to make the thing unworkable in itself because you're going to get more activity. In other words, if it's successful at the first stage, you're going to have to keep revising it to take care of more needs and more things that are being done as you go on through. So this shouldn't bother you at all. This is something that you would expect to happen. Now then, let's turn to the actual three steps in developing an organizational structure. Our first step is to determine what needs to be done and the people needed to do it. Now, I'm not going to try to stand up here and go through in any detail what needs to be done in the local parish. You can make a list that would get far better than, bigger and better than any I could make, and I'm not going to try to do it. Nor am I going to try to, in any way, shape, or form, compete with this one that's up here. What I want to do is this. I want to raise the question, what are basic functions that we have in every organization? The idea being, let's take a look at all of the things that need to be done here in administration. And then so that we have some idea of when we have covered all of the various functions and how we might put them together. I think we can say this, that in any organization, we can set up as many as 6 things that you will find in some measure in any organization, I don't care where it is, what type it is, these are pretty well basic. There'll be different manifestations, and I don't want you to misjudge some of the words I'm going to use here because some of you are going to... If you do, you're going to come off with some completely erroneous impressions of what I'm trying to say. But I'm saying there are 6 things that become pretty basic. First of all, we have in any organization, we've got to do some work that actually produces the good or service we're turning out. Now, somebody's going to say, oops, he's going to talk about production in the church, and I've heard some people talk about it, but I'm just trying to pin down this as one of the basic functions. An organization exists for a particular purpose. We're either providing a good or we're providing a service of some kind, using service in the general sense. This is one of our basic functions. We're providing this good or service. It takes some function here, to some things to provide the good or service we're doing. Then another thing is this. Despite the fact that we use the cliche that if you build a better mousetrap than anybody else has built, the world will beat a path to your door, we know it just isn't true. I don't care how good a good or service you have, even if in some cases you practically give it away free, you have still got to do a job of telling people about it and motivating them to use it. I hesitate here to use the word selling, which we use as a general function, that you've got to sell this thing because it's gotten so many evil connotations with payola and all the rest of it. I hesitate even to use the term. But at least let me use communication and motivation. Before somebody decides I'm going to put motivation in wrong, wait till I get down to it. Then you can argue with me about it later on. But we do have this job. People just are not going to. Even if we get to the place where we offer, as has frequently been done, chest x-rays free, as a checkup against tuberculosis, offer them by highly trained, competent people, you're still not going to get the majority of people doing anything about it, even if the service is a worthwhile one, everybody will recognize it and it's free. We've had that experience on the Washington University campus where we ended up with free chest x-rays, even had it on a mass production basis that you could go on through the line when you came back from lunch, so that you could just walk back from the lunchroom through the thing and on back and really not take any extra time. Until you really got to the place where you put on somewhat of a campaign of communication and motivation to make it worthwhile, you still got very few people that even bothered to do it when it was completely free. And I'm sure if you'd ask anybody, should you have a chest x-ray once a year, they'd all said yes. You give it to them free, you give it to them so there's no problem, you still have to communicate and motivate. They're just not going to do it automatically. I think this is true in anything, that people are made in such a way that they just don't do it unless we've got good communication and motivation. Another function that we have in almost every organization, I suppose we have to some degree, and everyone, is a matter of financing. Living in a monetary economy rather than a barter economy, we need money for all of these things, so that financing becomes a basic function in any organization. Then another one, which is just as basic, is a matter of staffing, or the personnel function. I suppose this is one that we probably have neglected to as large an extent as possible in the church. I'm not talking about the church at large. I think we're beginning to do more and more things with this function so far as the overall church is concerned. But even there, we neglected it for years. But in the individual congregation, we've neglected it. In other words, here is a function of finding the right people, knowing what talents people have, getting the right people into the right job becomes a basic function in any organization. You can do it by chance, but somewhere something has to be done. You've got to get people here into these particular jobs. So this becomes a basic function. Another basic function is one of accounting. We've got to keep records in any organization. If you have any purposeful activity toward a goal, unless you keep records of how well you're doing, you're just not getting anywhere. So this becomes basic. And then lastly, I think research is basic to any organization. We can't get to the place where we do anything in any organization without having all of the facts at hand. We ought to also, in an organization, if it's to perpetuate itself, constantly be looking for ways of doing things better. So that research becomes a basic function. We have then six functions which become basic. The production of a good or service, communication and motivation to get people to use that good or service, financing to provide the money, the capital that's needed, staffing so that you get the people provided in the proper jobs at the to fit those particular individuals, accounting for record keeping, and research then to give us information for our administration and for improving what we do in the organization. Those things become pretty basic in any organization. Doesn't make a difference where it is. These six functions are in there, or should be in there in some form, because these functions have to be carried out. Somebody is either doing these things, or by not doing them, is implying that what's happened in the past is going to continue, or if you just go ahead, for example, in staffing, that some or other the right person is going to volunteer for the right job, that kind of thing. But these six things are being done somewhere. If you don't do research formally, somebody is trying to evaluate what's going to happen, or he just comes out and if it's purposeful activity and assumes that what happened in the past will happen in the future and so forth. These things are all basic in any organization. No. So far as the church is concerned, if we take the basic goal that we talked about, an increasing number of people brought to faith who worship and serve the true God, we can immediately see that in the basic function of the church, we have several things here. So so far as the service we're producing is concerned, has become basic. Our basic goal, as already said, we've got to bring people to faith. This is one of the things that we do here in the church activity. Immediately with that, I think we ought to say that you have to keep people in faith. Just bringing them in faith is not enough, so if we want an increasing number of people, you see, who are being brought to faith and worship and serve the true God, we've got to have activity to bring them in faith. We've got to have activity to keep them in faith if they're going to be worshiping and serving the true God. We've got worship as another one of the basic services for which the church is established, and then helping people to serve the true God. If this is the function of the church, you can say this is the function of an individual, but to the extent that we put it down here as one of the primary functions of the church, that we're going to have these people who can worship and serve the true God, we should be helping these people do together, you see, in service to God what they can't do as an individual. So this becomes, again, a basic function. Now, so far as communication and motivation are concerned, we recognize immediately that communication is necessary. The Bible clearly lays this down and gives us instructions. We're to preach, we're to teach, we're to tell people about Christ. In other words, our slogan, preaching, teaching, reaching, this kind of thing has to be done. We've got to bring the message out to individuals. So far as motivation is concerned, we're in a different situation entirely from where we are if we're doing this in business. Let me indicate, incidentally, this is one of the very highly controversial fields in business. To what extent do you motivate? To what extent is the motivation appropriate in selling? To what extent can you change what people really want to do? And to what extent ought you? I don't want to get into it, but I don't want you to decide here that what I'm saying is that in business, we motivate people to do what the business wants for its selfish ends, and that's where we stop. This thing has got a tremendous amount of discussion. It's just how far do you go and what do you do and just what is the obligation? Matter of fact, some people would say in business, you ought to quit with communication. You have no business motivating. That an individual should buy or not buy if you've given the fact of motivation has no business there. And other people would say it's even worse than that. You can't motivate them to do it anyway, so it's a complete waste of time when you're trying it. But I'm not trying. Fortunately, we don't have to get into this problem here. We recognize that so far as we're concerned in the church, that if we do the job of preaching, teaching, telling, that the Holy Ghost does the rest, and we don't have to do it. So this one of these nice, big, controversial areas we can completely forget about. We know we've got to do communication. This is clear cut from Scripture. We know that if we do the job of preaching, teaching, reaching, we'll have results. We don't have to do, the motivation is not ours. The job itself is done. I'm talking about motivation now of actually changing people. But this is done by the Holy Ghost. So this controversial area, we don't have a thing to do with. And in this sense, now you see, it makes our job easier than what it does in some other area. Clearly, we have a financing function. This becomes pretty largely, I would say, a matter of complete stewardship of money. We need money. We've got to get money in the church to do it, but it ought to be money in terms of doing the work of the Lord. And in this sense, our stewardship function, I think, is completely appropriate. So far as accounting is concerned, I'm sure every congregation has accounting. This is one of the functions. But let me point out there that I'm afraid that we, for years, and in most congregations today, we still have it only in terms of money. The term soul accounting is a mighty new one, I'm sure, in our church. If we're doing accounting in terms of our objectives, then the most significant accounting is not what the accountant does here, or the financial secretary. The most significant accounting is soul accounting. These are the souls entrusted to our care. Here is how they have grown. The real picture we ought to be able to show at the end of the year is an increase here, you see, in the growth of souls, not just in numbers. But this is what's happened to these individuals. We have records here of each individual and how he has grown, how he has participated in the work of the Lord. In other words, really, when you recognize that we want accounting here, that this is one of the functions, not just to keep books, but accounting to help us achieve the objectives of the organization, then in the church, soul accounting becomes really the more significant. This matter of accounting for money becomes just a side service function to account for a physical means by which we're doing the major job at hand. Now, I'm afraid we've often reversed it, and we've done a mighty good job of accounting here for money and a mighty poor job of accounting for souls. Matter of fact, even on the national picture, this gets to be disturbing at times when we suddenly see so many names just disappeared from baptism to confirmation, nobody knows where they ended up. We have not always done what we should, and I'm quite sure we're changing in that area. So far as staffing is concerned, I think we probably have been even more neglectful. We have somehow assumed that in church work, the right person is going to get into the right job somehow or other, just whether it's by osmosis or whether he's going to volunteer or what's going to happen, or we're finally going to get somebody who'll finally say yes after we try a group of them. we do mighty little with that. We are beginning through our stewardship committees to say that we ought to have, if we've got soul accounting, you see, and we actually have a complete record of each individual, his abilities, his education, his interests, his aptitudes, then we ought to be able to get people fitted into jobs where they actually belong. But this one, I'm afraid, we have almost completely neglected in our church. But it's a basic function in any organization, a function of staffing. You don't automatically get the right people in the right job without doing anything about it. You've got to know what kinds of people you want. You've got to know what kinds of people you have, and then get to the place where you have somebody who works on asking those people. I'm not trying to suggest just because you ask them they're going to do it, but I'm saying that as a minimum, we ought to be asking the people who have the right abilities to work in their particular area. Then lastly, so far as research is concerned, I suppose we have often been even more remiss. There we've been remiss until very recently, clear up to synodical levels. This, I suppose, becomes a relatively new idea. Let me point out that this has also been true in most other organizations, but I think almost everybody recognizes today that if you're going to do an effective job of administration, that research becomes basic in any organization, and we need to do it in our congregations. We need to study our community. We need to study our members. We need to study so that we know what the external and internal factors are on which to base our plans. And as I've indicated, we're getting a growing volume of literature, not only on the basis of research, but on how you can actually, some of these give you very detailed descriptions of how you can develop a pattern of your congregation, how you can actually do research in the community, and so forth. This, again, of course, still creates a problem. Don't try it unless you've got somebody in your congregation or a group of people who have some familiarity with it, because it may be a real problem. We don't always have the people to do it in all congregations. In addition to these basic functions, which have to be carried out in every organization, we're going to find that we will have some service functions which become necessary to carry out the basic functions. In other words, purchasing of materials may become so important that we want to assign some groups a specific job of doing all purchasing. I'm not talking about this necessarily in a church, but I think in a larger church this may actually be the case. But in business, we often set up a separate purchasing group. They serve only one function, to do the kind of purchasing wanted by the particular people carrying out the function. And I might indicate, even here, I put these in a separate category. A lot of people in business would still say, don't centralize purchasing. Let each individual group do its own purchasing, because when you try to centralize something which is purely a service, and it becomes highly complex, you spend more time getting the service department to know what you're buying than you actually do. And I've heard some churches propose a completely complex system of purchasing everything. They want to purchase the books in the school and so on down the line, have some lay committee of purchasing people. And let me assure you, so far as I'm concerned, that's pure unadulterated bunk. Most of these people haven't got the vaguest notion what the principal needs in the school, what kind of textbooks you need, and so forth. They've got a poor understanding of the purchasing function, and so they suddenly want to centralize it, because in their corporation they've got one person purchasing everything. But this is a service function. If it works better to have a group do purchasing, and if you make the same kinds of purchases repeatedly, it may well work better for that group. But keep in mind, it's not a basic function. It's purely a service function if you set it up separately. The other thing is that you've got to provide physical facilities. And here's one place in which we have, of course, set up a separate group in the church and have done it for a long time. We get a group, whether we call them the Board of Trustees or whether it happens to be the Plant Committee or the Board for Physical Facilities, as they're called in our church in Kirkwood, we do set up a separate group here to take care of the physical facilities. Keep in mind, however, this again is not a basic function. This gets around to the place where this is a service function. And I suppose in a lot of congregations, the ideal might be if we actually had a principal in the school who could take over the physical facilities. In other words, who as part of his administrative job had the job of taking care of the school and was actually in charge of the custodians in school, in charge of the school building. I might indicate, for example, in the state of Missouri, for a school to be accredited, now they don't accredit church schools, for a school to be accredited in the top ranks, the principal must have the authority over the building and must have this as one of his functions. In other words, if he's going to run a school, there's nothing sacred about a board here for physical facilities or a board of trustees. This is a service function to run the school. Now, I'm sure you've all heard principals complain because some or other they can't get the janitors to keep the washrooms clean. They can't get the janitors to get the heat in the right place. Off here sits the trustee who takes care of the janitors, and here's the poor principal who can't get anything done. This is a mistaken notion of function. This is a service function, and if he's running the school, he should be in charge of the service function. Now, obviously, if you're going to have him teach three grades and direct the choir and take care of the Young People's Society, you better not quite give him this job. That'll be the straw that breaks the camel's back. But this is a service function and to be treated as such. And I'm afraid that we build up such prestige in this Board of Trustees at times that they take such pride in the building that they're not quite sure that they recognize it's a service function. Well, see, this is not a basic thing. It's a service function. No. So far, you said, well, we've got a lot of things here to put in an organization, but we've got some more. So far, we haven't said a thing about how we get planning done, how we get organizing done, how we get implementing done, and how we get controlling done. In other words, we've got to carry out the basic functions of the organization and the service functions needed to carry them out, and we've got to carry out the basic functions of administration. We've got to have an organization which does both. And in that connection, let me just refer back here to this diagram. Since it looks like I'm not going to have time to put one up here, and I don't have one, I don't take time to do one that's fancy anyway. This one serves the purpose quite well. I may be misusing it, I hope not. I don't know what was intended here. But we have here various functional groups, the Board of Elders, Board of Evangelism, Board of Stewardship, Board of Parish Education. I take it the trustees here take care of the building. Board of Public Relations. I didn't say much about public relations. This is one phase of this overall process, of course, of communication motivation. Whether you want to set it up separately or not, I think it's a matter that might be open to some question, but nevertheless, this is a basic function. The Board of Finance. Now, in this connection, these people are all various functional areas as you go on through, recognizing that this one, the Board of Trustees, is really a service function. You're drawing these things on a line here in the church. I guess you better put them all on a straight line. But keep in mind, these people are still not doing the inherently one of the basic functions of an organization. They are serving other people who are carrying out the functions, and that would put them in a subsidiary function. I don't think I'd quite drop them down the line, though, on the church chart. Might make it look too bad. But it ought to be pretty clear that this is the there's only one reason for having a church building. That's to take care of the activities here of worship and the various activities in the church. There isn't any other function for it. So that often these people get to the place where they think it's almost certain. You see, we really put them on the wrong line. We ought to finally get to the place where we draw them off on a separate box and tie them up to the rest of these to be a service function. Now then, when you start talking about where do you do the overall planning and so forth, I don't know whether this was intended this way, but I would propose that what we need, and I'll talk more about that tomorrow, is lines going from each one of these, I suppose this is the idea of this line here, into this, with representatives from each one of these groups, up here in the central council. We call it a board of directors in our church. It makes no difference what you call it. I guess church council sounds more churchly than board of directors. And this group then actually doing the overall planning, responsible for overall planning, for overall organizing, for implementing to the extent of getting things started, and then these groups carrying out the actual functions, and this group also responsible for controlling. In other words, if you're going to get overall planning, overall organizing and so forth, you've got to put it up here in a group that does this. You're going to have to still get specific plans here. You're not going to do it by doing it as some churches have done, by saying, let's set up, in addition to that now, we'll set up one more over here, a planning board. You see what you've done? This is not a basic function. These are all part of the sub-functions of the basic objective of the organization. The group up here ought to be coordinating the basic objective. One of the difficulties we've had in this process, I think, is this. We started with individual boards, and this is true clear through up to Senate, and we've only put coordination in later. And on that basis, we have had boards at times working at cross purposes when they have to work together. But we've got these overall functions then of administration which have to be taken care of. Somebody's got to do overall planning, and you can be sure that the Board of Evangelism is not going to be doing overall planning for the congregation. Neither is the Board of Stewardship, or the Board of Parish Education, or any of the rest of these. You've got to have a board now which has representatives from all of these people on it to be doing the overall planning, you see, for the total congregation, working it on that basis. In other words, the best place to put these administrative functions in an overall sense is to put them here in a central board which represents all of the individual working boards. After you've gotten to the place where you've got all the various functions and various things that need to be done, then you've got a job which I'm not going to go into in detail, but you've got to now get around to asking how many individual jobs in this congregation does this amount to? How many jobs do we need over here to get this job done, to get this one done? How many people do we finally need to do these things? Asking the question, knowing what they're going to do, first of all, specifically, then asking the question, how many people do we need in constructing jobs? And in the process of building up your organization, after you've determined how many jobs, and this takes hours, I'm just going over it hurriedly, but each case you have to study very carefully, how many people one elder can take care of and so on down the line, then you've got to define responsibility, authority, and accountability. When we use the term responsibility, and I think it would be worthwhile if we start using it in a somewhat technical sense, because we get a lot of foolishness when we use responsibility and authority. The responsibility for any job is the work that's assigned to that job or position. In other words, the work you're actually assigning to this particular group, this is their responsibility. This is the general use of the term, and this is also the technical use of the term. Now, along with that, you have to give any group authority to do their job. What we mean by authority when we use it is not control that one person has over another, but the powers and rights that you entrust to any individual or group to make it possible to do their job. In other words, when we talk about the authority we assign to any job, we give these people a set of powers and rights in this job to do their job. We never give them authority quite equal to the responsibility, because in any organization of this kind, we're always reserving some authority, you see, up here. One of the difficulties is that when we start with boards and then we add this on top, just sort of after an afterthought, we've given these people complete responsibility and authority, and they resent the interference. They should have authority only to do this job in line with overall plans made by the higher group, you see. And in the same way, if you use subcommittees, you assign them authority to do the job, but never authority quite equal to the job, and reserve some authority for the group above them. Unless you clearly start with that as a principle of organization and clearly write that in, you're going to have trouble. And where we get into trouble is that we've often started here, you see, or way down here at the work level, which is true, and then nobody wants to give up any of the authority they have. You can't get a working organization unless you've always had authority, but authority short of total, because there's always authority left up here in the group above you. Then we also use when I'm talking about authority, for example, it ought to be rather specific. You might give a group, for example, authority to spend specific sums of money. This is one of my pet peeves in an awful lot of congregational things. We give a group authority to do all kinds of things except when it comes to the money area. And every time they want to spend $5, they have to take it back up to some other board. We ought to give the group authority to spend money as long as it's in line with the budget, up to a certain figure. Obviously, I'm not going to give a group authority to spend tremendous sums. We've decided in Kirkwood that they can spend anything that's in the budget up to a single expenditure of $250 without having to get any additional authority from the board to do it. But we need to give them specific. They've got to know what their authority is as well as their responsibility. Then another term we use is the term accountability. What accountability is your obligation to carry out your responsibility. I'm afraid here's one place where we've often been very remiss. We haven't made this accountability clear. Once you accept the job, you are accountable. You have picked up an obligation to carry out that responsibility. And let me go one step further. You have accepted the responsibility to exercise the authority needed to get the job done. I have frequently heard people tell me, I don't want to exercise authority. I don't want to tell anybody else what to do. When you take the job, you have agreed to carry out the responsibility, and this you can only do by exercising the authority you have. You say, oh, I don't want to decide whether I have to spend this or not. I don't want to make this decision. You don't belong in the job. You have agreed to carry out to use the authority to get the job done. Let me also say this about accountability. It cannot be delegated. You can never give your accountability for a particular job to anybody else. This isn't to say that you can't get an assistant, but you've never gotten rid of that accountability. If you get an assistant and you turn part of this job over to the assistant, you are still accountable. And don't ever say to anybody, it isn't really my fault, the assistant made the mistake. In any job that you have, if you have given part of this, delegated it to somebody else, you've never gotten rid of the accountability. You are still accountable. And one of the big problems we have, one of the troubles you have constantly with beginning supervisors in business, is to get that across to them. Don't ever get to the place where you don't back up the man underneath you. You may tell him to his face he's wrong, but so far as you're concerned, this was your organization. You don't come in and say, look, I didn't do it, this fellow did it. This doesn't make sense at all. You are accountable. You've delegated it to somebody else, you're still accountable. And you just have to admit as a man, we were wrong, we didn't carry out what we had. But you can't get rid of it. Also, accountability always in an organization goes upward. You're never accountable to fellows who are further down in the organization. I've seen organizational charts where you get some of these people accountable to a committee that's underneath them. This can never work. You're always accountable in an organization upward. It's the only way in which you can make an organization fit together. You've got to have accountability upward. And this is one of the main reasons why we try to get a central planning group, you see. And if it gets to the place where the central planning group is accountable downward, obviously you can't get the plans. You've got to get the thing the other way. These people are accountable to the highest group, which does the overall administration, not the other way, or the thing just isn't going to work. And along with accountability inherent in it are standards of performance, which you expect. You can't hold people accountable until they know what they're accountable for. They've got to know what's actually expected of them, not just in a vague way, but very specifically. Somebody talked here about yesterday, I guess after the period was over, about do we finally want to get down to where we write job specifications, job manuals, and so forth. Eventually, you want this quite clear and probably preferably in writing of exactly what people are responsible for to the specific standards. You can't hold them accountable until you do. We've already, in talking about this, talked about delegation, and that is dividing work and assigning it to some of the people to assist you. Keep in mind, as you delegate, of course, you are still accountable. You can delegate the work, but you don't lose track of it. You can't say, I'm sure you've often heard people say, well, I really am not responsible. I gave that job to somebody else, and I forgot about it. You can't do this in a good organization. If you've been given the job, you said, too big for me, you delegate, but you are still responsible, you're going to have to be sure what happens. You can't operate any other way. And then briefly, let me comment on centralization and decentralization. What we mean by those terms in administration is that in centralization, we get most decisions made up at a central point. In decentralization, we get as many decisions as possible made clear down here where the work is being done. I think the only kind of organization that makes sense in any church group is a decentralized one. Get as many decisions as possible made clear down here where the work is being done. But of course, keep in mind, you can't get every decision made. You'll never treat it as an overall organization. You've got to get overall plans here, more specific plans for evangelism here, then have these committees work. But get the final decisions. Don't lay down detailed decisions of exactly how you do everything. Get as many decisions as possible made right there at the point where the thing is being done. This also, as I'll talk tomorrow about in motivation and communication, is sound from the standpoint of getting people to work together in groups. I think this clearly in the church, I don't think we have too much of a problem there, but I think we want to be awfully sure to recognize that this decentralization is not an evil, that actually in other organizations we are decentralizing. As long as we recognize that decentralization doesn't mean every decision made down here, but those decisions which can be made there, keeping in mind we reserve to make up further those that we need to plan the thing to organize it, to take care of the basic operation of this whole procedure. Now, if we put this together into a congregation, I had jotted down some various jobs here. I don't think we need to talk about these, but let me point out that frequently we put together structures. I've talked about a functional structure. This would be an example of a functional structure with the basic function. We may have a geographic structure, I suppose not very often in church, but if you have two parishes being served by one pastor, you may well want to get to the place where you've got coordination between the two, but you've still got two separate functions as you'd have in two subsidiary companies. And then we also have some things that are hybrid. We may, for example, in a business, decide that a particular product is so important that we're going to put all of the operation, all of the steps, the production, the selling, and everything under one man and just pull it out for separate attention. This would give us a hybrid structure. We have set up in our church, I think frequently without understanding it and frequently with a lot of fuss, a hybrid structure of one we use most frequently as a youth committee. Maybe this is one of the reasons why a lot of youth committees think their function is to take care of providing entertainment for youth. You see, it's a hybrid structure. This, in none of these does youth fit. As such,
You see, you couldn't put youth up here. If you put up a youth committee here, it's a separate committee. It doesn't fit. We're talking about basic functions. This group certainly has functions with youth. Clearly, this group ought to have. We ought to have. We've talked about it, have it right here, child and youth evangelism. I dare say you might even have, you certainly have some of it here by the time they get to the age of high school and beyond. We've got an awful lot of youngsters earning money these days, and if we're going to start through stewardship of time, talents, and resources, this one has got a youth function. This one clearly has a youth function. You might even have a little bit of it here. I don't know, but probably not too much. In most of our congregations, I guess we hire somebody to do the work instead of bringing anybody in to do it. We probably have somewhat of a function here, and not too much of a function here. But you see what's happened. These various functions are all related to youth. Now, what do? Do we set up a separate youth committee or not? If we do, we ought to recognize that that youth committee has got to work with these basic functions of the church, that they've got to work together. We had a group in our congregation recently say we have our youth committee in the wrong place. We set up a board for youth and adult activities, recognizing that it clearly isn't on a par with the rest of them, but that we want to emphasize this in our congregation. We had one of the teachers in our school come in with a resolution to say it's in the wrong place. He'd read in some of the church literature that the board, the youth committee, ought to report to the board for parish education. Well, I tell you, he stirred up a hornet's nest. Some people say, what do you mean? All we're going to do is have these youngsters here in educational programs, this is all? And I think he finally decided he better take his resolution back and wait a while and restudy it. But you see, this is not strictly an educational function. I can see what he's trying to get at. He was trying to make sure that education was a primary thing in every one of these youth programs. There isn't any reason why I assume worship is one of the primary responsibilities of the Board of Elders as well as soul keeping. No reason in the world why worship shouldn't be one of the factors which is involved there. Certainly stewardship ought to be involved. Certainly evangelism ought to be involved. We can do a mighty effective, we do in some congregations do a very effective job using youngsters for evangelism, for bringing people into Sunday school and so forth. So that if these are members of the church, you see, having to be in a special age group, we have to recognize that they come under the basic functions, Board of Elders, evangelism, stewardship, education, they're involved in all of them. So if we're going to set up this separate youth committee, recognize we're doing it, not because it's one of the basic functions of the church, but because these basic functions of the church belong here to all age groups. If we want to separate this age group out, well and good. I think you see the other problem involved. We're in an organizational structure to get the ladies' age. And I suppose some people would say, don't start that, just keep them out. As a matter of fact, I argued in hours for not getting them in there at all. We've got them in very loosely. Under the board for youth and adult activities, we've got a board for adult activities, again with a representative from each one of the organizations in the congregation, for overall planning of the program in that group. We haven't done a very effective job of getting all of these various things like stewardship and so forth in there, because I'm afraid we've still got some groups in our congregation where in setting them up, they set them up, we've got at least one that was set up forever to have no serious purpose. But you talk to them and say, I have an educational program. He said, what do you mean? We set it up so we wouldn't have one. This one was for only for fellowship. Well, you can understand. I'm not objecting. I suppose they serve a function, but you get into a real problem. You see, you don't keep all of the various things straight. Well, I think I better quit at this stage and let you ask questions. I appreciate the fact we had an organizational chart here. It saved me a lot of writing. No. I wouldn't say that. The only thing I want to say about a youth committee is this. Recognize when you set it up that it's not the same kind of committee as these basic functional committees, elders, evangelism, and so on.